Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we talk to the newest candidate for governor of California, a familiar voice here on the Issue Is, Katie Porter, the Democrat from Irvine, who was a member of Congress, was a candidate for U.S. Senate, and just this week became a candidate for governor, something she's hinted on our show before. We talked to her, her first TV sit-down of the campaign. We also talk with one of the smartest guys in California politics, Mike Madrid, the Republican strategist who's not a huge fan of Donald Trump, but still a fan of old school Republican values and one of the leading experts on Latino votes in the entire country. Clearly, that is such a huge part of the California story. We get really interesting insights from him on that, plus what he thinks of Gavin Newsom's podcast. And a bonus for the podcast, the conversation I had on Fox 11 TV this week, but not on The Issue Is, with Matt Mahan, the mayor of San Jose, who's got some really interesting thoughts on what to do with the homeless and interesting thoughts on what to do with city leaders that don't perform. That conversation, an Issue Is podcast bonus, will be at the end of the show. But let's start with Katie Porter, who put out a big announcement video this week. Most of the focus of it was about how she was going to fight back against Donald Trump. Polls show her coming into this as a front runner. At least her poll that she put out and paid for showed that. That poll notably did not include the name Kamala Harris, because Harris has not entered the race. Porter, a few months back, said if Harris did enter the race, that would be, quote, field clearing, suggesting that she would be part of the field that would clear. We asked her about that. We asked about her plans, tried to get specific with her plans about what she would do as California governor, as somebody who's never really worked on state issues before, in terms of elective office for the state. It was a long conversation that's got a lot of meat, and the first time she's talked about a lot of these issues. So here is that full, unedited conversation. Joining us now for her first local TV sit-down of the campaign is Congresswoman Katie Porter. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on the run.
Appreciate it. I'm really excited.
So in the past, we've always talked to you about mostly federal issues. You've never run for statewide office before or local office before. Why do you want to be governor?
Well, look, I think right now, the federal and the state are going to come together. Why do I say that? Because the governor is going to have two big tasks, and they're going to have to be able to do both. One is stand up to Trump, block and tackle attacks that are coming, try to push Trump to deliver for California where we can, and at the same time, focus on California's challenges. Things like the cost of housing, which is something I've worked on in my whole career, childcare, which continues to be a big problem for families after the pandemic, and making sure that our economy is strong and growing. So I think being able to know how to negotiate with the federal government, knowing where those levers are, I think we're all getting a crash course in just how important that is in these first months of Trump's presidency.
Is there some people that saw Trump being such a big part of your announcement and thought, why not talk more about local issues? And maybe argue that with Trump, you've got to try to get him on your side to give money. I mean, we see Newsom has really softened his approach to Trump to try to get, you know, all this federal dollars.
Well, look, a lot of our local projects and a lot of the things that California takes pride in are tied in part to federal funding. So we provide health care. Medi-Cal is a good, strong health care system. Where does that money come from? The federal government. I'm working back in the classroom at the University of California. We're seeing in real time on campus the effects of Trump's cuts to research grants, to NIH, to funding. And so I think it's about recognizing that these things are going to intersect. The only way we're going to survive as California and thrive, which is the goal during Trump's presidency and beyond, is if we have a strong economy that can weather some of the things that he's going to throw back at us.
But is the best way to deal with Trump to sort of punch him in the face, or is the best way to try to shake his hand?
Well, one of the things I've said before is I will say yes to anybody,
right,
and I will also say no to anybody. I think I have a reputation throughout the state as a straight shooter, as somebody who cannot be bought, not by any entity or any organization. So where there are opportunities to work with Trump, and I think Governor Newsom did the right thing, asking Trump to come and look at the wildfires, walking with him, showing him what California needs. We need a strong advocate for California with how we engage with the federal government, just just like we need a strong advocate for statewide concerns when we're dealing with local and county government.
So in your ad, you talked about that you want to bring some big new ideas. What is one big new idea that you're bringing?
Yeah, so housing is going to be the sort of most top of mind, laser focused on housing. I think we've seen California make some progress using the housing targets, the affordable housing targets in each community. They have not gotten us where we need to be, which is making housing affordable for that next generation of workers, for the folks who are graduating from our universities. And so we're going to need to think about how to do that. Part of that is going to involve being willing to look at the CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, and see where it is being used, not to protect any serious environmental concerns, but in fact, just to block housing development. And I think there are some really good partners in the legislature. This is not ideological. Folks like Buffy Wicks, Scott Wiener, in the California Assembly and Senate, they're already talking about this. The second piece on housing, I would say, is we focused a lot so far on how to get people off the streets who are experiencing homelessness, out of encampments, getting them into a safe place, making our communities safer. And that's really important. The piece we need to now focus on is preventing more people from becoming homeless, because that is an expensive problem and a hard problem to solve. So there are some really successful programs, including some being piloted across the state, that focus on homelessness prevention. And that, I think, is an area where we need to put more effort.
So if you had to concisely say the sort of the big idea on housing, it's what? It's CEQA reform?
It is to unleash more building more quickly. Right. So it's not just saying we need more housing, which I think
that?
The governor. So CEQA reform is part of it.
Yeah.
California making investments in some of the infrastructure for communities. So the sewer, the water, all of those things drive up costs for builders.
Yeah.
And we could think of those things as infrastructure because housing is infrastructure for our entire economy. And then prevention of homelessness, really thinking about how can we get ahead of people becoming homeless, because we know that once someone experiences chronic homelessness, it's very, very challenging and very, very expensive to address it. I guess the other thing I would say I'm going to focus on more than I think our current or recent governors have is childcare. The pandemic cost us a lot of childcare providers. We have people providing childcare in this state who cannot even afford to get childcare for their kids.
Mm.
So their own kids are home without after school programs so that they can go work in a childcare. If we want to have families come here, young families come here, we want to see businesses grow here, we have to make sure we have the workers, and childcare is a piece of that.
So is that more subsidies for people for childcare?
I think it's thinking about how to make the state's investment in childcare. We have to think about this the same way we do education, roads. These are all people can't leave their kid to get to work. It's just the same as if there's not a road to get them to work. And so I think we want to think about how can we bring down those costs and how can we put childcare close to where people work.
So we know that you worked with Vice President Harris when she was Attorney General Harris. We've got a picture of the two of you from back in that era. You like her a lot. You've said in the past that if she runs for vice president, that would have a, quote, field clearing
for governor.
Effect. If she runs for governor, maybe she is running for president. That's a whole other story. If Vice President Harris runs for governor, it would have a field clearing effect. Does that include you? Are you out of the race if she's in?
So I'm one of the people who've gotten to see firsthand just exactly how talented she is when she's serving California. I saw that when she was our attorney general. And so if she were to declare for governor, that would everyone, including me, would have to think hard about whether to stay in the race. I think we don't know what she's going to do and we don't know when she's going to do it. I will tell you that I did not hesitate to enter the race. And I'm not hesitating in terms of moving forward to talk to Californians, to listen to Californians, to come up with good ideas, because she's deciding. This moment calls for leadership. It calls for leaning forward. And there's a real frustration right now with Democrats, with politicians generally. Are we thinking about what comes next? Are we positioned to lead? And so I think it's really, really important that I get into the race. But anybody, including me, is going to have to understand that she is a formidable talent. She would have credible name recognition, and it would be very, very tough to compete with her for this job. And so I'm waiting to see what she does and what ideas she brings to the table. But I think we all have to be realistic about that.
But isn't that sort of an odd
thing to say. Basically, I'm the best person except for her.
Well,
or,
I think
or
you...
give me money unless you want to give her money.
No, I mean, no, she's not asking for money, right?
No,
she's
no,
not
but,
in the
but,
race,
no, but
right?
That's part of the that's the thinking, right? That you got to get in now because everybody's got to raise so much money. She doesn't need to necessarily raise as much money because she's got 100% name ID and she's got the fundraising behind her anyways, and that's why everybody's doing it and she can wait.
Yeah, so look, I think that she can wait, but I think there is a cost to waiting, and there's a cost to California for waiting. So one of the things I've been able to do is take time after I was done serving in Congress the last few months, as I wound up my time in Congress, to listen, to travel, to do the work, to help me think, to meet with some of the people who've worked for other governors, both Republican and Democrat, and to learn from them and to think about what this job is different, right? It's different than the jobs I've had as a congressperson or as a consumer advocate. This is a different job than Kamala Harris has had as attorney general,
sure.
Or as vice president. So I've been using that time really, really wisely. We don't know what she's going to do, but I'm going to tell you this, like, this is a job that I feel strongly about, that I'm confident about my ability to do, that I'm also humble enough to know what I need to learn. I don't think we'd be well served by having people who think they can do a good job as governor, who are ready to take on Trump, who are ready to build housing, who are ready to bring down costs, who know the price of groceries. I don't think it would do well for us all to sit around. The vice president has said it may take many, many months for her to come to a decision.
Right.
And respectfully, she's entitled to that time.
So you could see a scenario where she's gets in and you stay in?
Well, I think it would depend on what happens and what she says when she gets in and when she gets in. If
right.
she announces tomorrow, Alex, I think it's pretty tough for everybody.
Yeah.
If she decides the day before the filing deadline, a few months before the election, I think that's a very different situation,
yeah.
both for her
yeah.
and for Californians, not just for me.
So a lot of people feel like one of her biggest mistakes when she was running for president was when she went on The View and they asked her, how would you be different than President Biden? And she didn't really have an answer. So I'm going to ask you the same question about Governor Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
How would you be different as governor than him?
Well, I have a lot of respect for what Governor Newsom's done, and a couple of things he's done have really improved my life. He made school lunch free for every single kid in California. You want to talk about bringing down costs? That put hundreds of dollars a month back in my pocket. Made community college free. I've got kids heading to college and knowing they can go to community college. So a lot of respect for those ideas. I think one difference is I'm going to try to focus more intensely on a couple of the biggest problems. And that was difficult for Governor Newsom to do, in part because of the pandemic, the recall. There have been a lot of wildfires several times. We're going to keep seeing that stuff. I think that makes it all the more important that you are committed to focusing on what is the biggest challenge we are facing. And up and down this state, whether you're talking about rural communities, where housing stock is aging, where they can't attract young workers, whether you're talking about urban California, the cost of housing is our biggest challenge. And so I think you're going to see me not just say, I want to do this and this and this and this and this, but really try to say, this is what we're going to do. And then move on to the next thing. And I will think about how housing relates to things like transportation, how it relates to things like environmental protection, how it relates to things like wildfire. But we have got to have a strong economy in California. We should be thriving. We have talent, we have resources, we have people, we're the best state in the country.
Yeah.
And we need to have that pride and that energy and compete for jobs.
You know, there's a lot of people when you talk about housing who see the fact that we've just had these wildfires and the response now is, let's get rid of a lot of these building regulations. Let's suspend CEQA in these areas. And there's people that think, well, why don't we do that everywhere? If we can do
yeah.
that now, maybe we should do that for everywhere. It would help with building. Do you see there's any value in that?
No, so we definitely have to reevaluate CEQA as it applies yeah. to residential housing. We just have to. We are not going to be able to build fast enough and at a price point that makes the housing affordable for our workers. And so we need more workforce housing. We need more housing on dorms. We need more housing for seniors who want to age in place. And so we are going to have to think about CEQA. I do think in talking to some of the local, the LA supervisors, they are working on a plan for thinking about, can we experiment a little bit here while still being true to the things that made those neighborhoods, that made Altadena and made the Palisades special.
What do you think of the governor's podcast?
So I haven't listened to the governor's podcast. I know I'm on a lot of podcasts, but I'm not a podcast person. I have three kids and now I have a dog and a cat. So honestly, I'm a peace and quiet person when I can get it. So I have not listened. I will say, I think the general impetus of we need to listen more mm-hmm. and we need to be unafraid to listen to those who disagree with us. That's something I hold dear. You know, I've campaigned in really tough territory in Orange County, yep. in places that were Republican and still are very Republican, like yep. Huntington Beach. And you've been at some of those events where you have to stand on your own 2 feet, and there's going to be tough questions, there's going to be criticism. So I think the overall, the idea of engaging with people that we don't always listen to is important. I was in the Capitol on January 6th. It is very hard for me to accept Steve Bannon as having legitimate views when he called for attacks on the Capitol.
Well, and he also said multiple times during that podcast with Governor Newsom that Donald Trump won that 2020 election, and Governor Newsom never pushed back on that.
I didn't hear it, so you'll have to take your word for it.
Okay. A couple things from a policy perspective that the governor has done. I want to see if you would continue them. One of the things he did was health care for undocumented people. It's been very expensive. Estimates say that it's billions of dollars over budget for where they expected it. Is that something that you think we should do? Is that something we should continue? Is that something we should rein back?
Well, our goal should certainly be that every single person living in California is able to be healthy. That's good for all of us, right? So we don't want any group of people in California getting sick, having diseases, not being able to work. That's bad for everyone. That's the goal. And I think I share the governor's goal there, is wanting everyone in California to have health care. We're going to have to make some tough decisions if we're not able to push back on Donald Trump about how we afford it. I would say I have not dug in yet, Alex, but I want to understand what percentage of the cost overrun that we're facing is due to rising healthcare costs generally, and what percentage of it is due to expanded coverage, including for people who have come to this country without documentation. I suspect it's a mix of both. Yeah. We also have very, very generous Medi-Cal coverage for everybody. And so even for the, you know, taking that apart, we give better coverage with Medi-Cal. And I think that's something to be proud of. So there are gonna be some hard choices coming for the next governor. And I think one of the things I would say to Californians is, I'm tough and I'm capable of making hard choices. I don't need to be loved. I wanna be successful.
So you would be open to basically killing or bringing back that program?
Well, I think we just need to look at the numbers. I mean, this is a math question.
Yeah. Speaking of
math. Calls for a whiteboard.
Speaking of math, Medicare for All, which is mm-hmm. something that's been talked about at the federal level. It's also been talked about at the state level. Hugely expensive. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason it hasn't happened yet. Do you think we need to do Medicare for All in California?
So I think that's best done at the federal level for a whole bunch of reasons, yeah. partly because people move. There's economies of scale to doing it. I think that that's something that we should continue to talk about at the federal level. Look, the thing that people have to remember about Medicare is, why do we say we want Medicare for All? Why? Because Medicare gives you the highest quality healthcare at the lowest price with the most choice of doctors. That's a lot to like. That is a really good goal. But I think trying to do this at the state level is probably not the right choice. But I don't think we should back away from California being a strong voice at the federal level, saying some of the things Congress has failed to do, some of the things administrations in the past have failed to do, efforts from Trump, for instance, to let pharmaceutical companies go back to charging incredibly high prices, those things only make our healthcare challenges bigger.
Some of the wealthiest Californians pay among the highest taxes in the country. Governor Newsom has not raised taxes on the wealthy during his time. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we should? Do you think taxes are too high, too low, just right? What
yeah.
do you think?
So for me, the way to ask this is, what are we getting for our taxes, right? So the question is not, there's no number that exists sort of in the abstract. It is, what are we getting? I think there's a lot of concern in California that one of the things we're not getting is an economy that's growing. We're not getting population that's growing. So I think you have to look at, how are we using those tax dollars? With regard to any particular tax program, I'm not able to sketch out my entire budget for you here on air. Okay. I'm sure I'll be back to do that at some point. Yeah. But I do think that we need to be willing to say, there's nothing here that we shouldn't be saying. This is partly why I'm so fed up with kind of the idea of efficiency that's being pushed by the Trump administration. It's not efficient just to tear things down. It is efficient to set standards. Everybody in government, Democrat, Republican, Independent, should be an advocate for taxpayers, for making sure we get what we're paying for. And I think there are concerns in some areas that that's not true.
You know, you last ran for U.S. Senate. Obviously, that was not successful. Mm-hmm. You finished in third place. What was the big lesson you learned from that race that you think you can take into this next race that will make you successful this time?
Yeah, so it definitely was an opportunity to learn, to reflect. I think I've had a chance to think a little bit about what that job would have been in the Senate, what's different about the job of governor. I mentioned I've been talking to a lot of people about looking at our past governors, where have they been successful, where have they struggled, and trying to think ahead about that. Look, I also had the opportunity to travel the state, and I loved doing that. So some of my favorite days of that campaign, day that I spent in Bakersfield with some carrot growers, days that I want to get up to Reading soon to look at some lumber. I think we really need to have someone who's curious and passionate about California. The Senate campaign was also different because it was hard to be flying back and forth to Washington while being as focused on listening to Californians. Mm. And so that's something I want to do differently this time.
Obviously, a big difference between being in Congress and doing this is an executive job.
Mm-hmm.
What in your background prepares you to be an executive? What have you run on this sort of similar scale?
Yep. So I don't think there is anything, I want to be clear, Alex, that is on a similar scale to being governor of California other than being president of the United States, which I clearly have not been. So similar scale is going to be tough. But I am really, really proud of the way that I ran, set up from start to finish, the program that then Attorney General Harris asked me to run to hold big banks accountable, to stop breaking the law, and to help families keep their homes. When she did that, there were hundreds of thousands of Californians, millions of Californians who were in foreclosure, behind on their payments, had been trying to get help, many of them for years. Mm. We set that program up virtually overnight. It was widely considered, and I'm really proud of my staff and the people who helped me do this. It was widely considered the most successful program across the country in all 50 states in terms of holding the banks accountable, also working collaboratively with them. Can we do better for Californians? And often the answer was yes.
And lastly, on the governor's race, there's a lot of people in that race, so you got to kind of get your own lane. Real concisely, what's the Katie Porter lane?
Yeah.
What's the big differentiator?
I think that it's that two things I would say. One is that I'm very tough. I am a fighter. I am not afraid of Donald Trump. I am not afraid of anybody. And I think that comes in part out of having a bunch of tough races, including that tough Senate race. And so I think that's going to be really important. We cannot have somebody who is going to be paused, who's going to be scared, who's going to be ossified in terms of how they react to what's coming with Trump. And so I think that's important. The other thing is there's no separating today the state issues from the federal issues. Mm. Trump has made that clear. And so I think one of the things that sets me apart from my colleagues is while I haven't spent 20 or 30 years in Sacramento in different jobs, what I do understand very, very well is how the federal government works, where those levers are, what California should be asking for, not just with Trump, but we need to be stronger and more aggressive in our ask of the federal government. Housing's a great example. Mm. This has been our biggest challenge for a couple of decades. Mm. Where has the federal government been? I'd like to know that as a taxpayer, and I'll definitely be asking that question as governor.
And it was interesting, because last week we had the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development on the issue and his basic take was California's kind of screwed this up, and for the most part, you're on your own.
Yeah, well, that should not be an acceptable answer. And as a taxpayer, that is not an, I think you can tell that is not an acceptable answer to me, and it should not be an acceptable answer for the governor. We send a lot of money to Washington, and one of the things that comes with that is Washington helping us with our challenges. I was happy to do that when I was in Congress, voted to send, for instance, disaster aid to other parts of the country. Sure. I expect my colleagues to do the same for California.
All right, you know we like to end with something called personal issues. This is fun, rapid-fire cultural favorites. We've done this with you before, so we want to get to your recent stuff, so sort of catch up with you where you're at now. Okay, so ready? 30 seconds, here we go. What's your favorite TV show you've watched recently?
Ooh, Beef.
Oh, good one on Netflix. Favorite recent book? I know you're an avid reader.
I just read The Frozen River, which is an amazing book set in 1789 or 86 in rural Maine.
Wow, okay. Last concert you attended?
Oh, Bonnie Raitt. And it was so great. I was so thrilled. I have admired her for so long. And just to see her at this stage in her life, still rocking, still strong, still fighting, it was inspiring.
And what is the best vacation spot in California?
Ooh. I'm gonna keep it local and say Newport Beach.
That is a great spot. I wish I had some Let's Give Them Something to Talk About that next time for you. But thanks so much for coming on. Bonnie Raitt is having a moment right now.
She really is. Well deserved. Well deserved.
We appreciate it. Congressman, good luck out there campaign trail.
Our thanks to Katie Porter. Next up here on the Issue Is podcast is Mike Madrid. the Republican political strategist. And let's start with a little bragging on him.
One of America's most influential Hispanics, Mike Madrid.
That is longtime political strategist Mike Madrid being announced one of the most influential Latinos. Here is Mike's outstanding new book. It's called The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. I couldn't recommend it more. Mike Madrid, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
One of the smartest guys in the state. So for people that haven't read it yet and maybe don't know that much about your background, can you give us the sort of elevator pitch of your life?
Well, I'm a Republican political consultant. Spent about 30 years in Republican politics, but I've also have always been work with and been fascinated by the Latino vote, this emerging change of what's going to shape the country. That's helped me build a lot of friendships, relationships across the aisle. I have one of the few unique distinctions in this country, really, of running campaigns at very high levels for Democrats as well. So I've worked across both sides of the aisle. I argue in my book that neither party really understands this vote. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing that play out in real time, not only in Washington, but also in Sacramento. And I think the country's in for this crash of reality as Latinos become a bigger part of the electorate on both sides of the aisle.
And you've worked hard against Donald Trump over the years, but still believe in a lot of the conservative values that made you a Republican to begin with.
Yeah, I think I'm still a Republican that way, a classical Reagan conservative, but co-founder of the Lincoln Project to work against Donald Trump.
So give us some insight into why Latinos are voting for Donald Trump.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with economic populism. One, the Latino vote is the fastest growing segment of the blue collar working class. This is where we're seeing the largest shift to the right. Latinos are becoming much less animated by racial and ethnic issues, much more by economic pocketbook issues. My book was essentially a prediction back in June, we talked about this, of what was likely to come. It's always, I think, in some ways nice to be right in a prediction in a book. And why it happened, but seeing Donald Trump elected probably wasn't what I would prescribe for what ails the country at this moment in time.
And also, as Latinos are here for multi-generations,
exactly.
You see a big change with in that sense as well, right?
Yeah, that the biggest differentiation between Latinos is not whether or not you speak Spanish. It's not your country of origin, the difference between Cubans and Venezuelans and Mexican Americans. The largest demarcation by large measure is generational differences. Mm-hmm. And it is the about 80% of Latinos are now U.S. born. That's dramatically different than 15 or 20 years ago. It's these younger, under 30, U.S.-born, English-dominant Latinos that are rejecting sort of the politics of immigration being the prime view the world. And it's much more focused on affordability, much more focused on economic pocketbook issues and the inaffordability of California to live and work.
And you've kind of found that the longer they're here, the more they sort of view immigration like white people.
That's exactly right. In fact, about a month before this last election in November, Telemundo did a poll showing 63% of Latinos felt the undocumented were a burden. That 63% is the exact same percentage of white voters that voted for Proposition 187 in 1994.
So if this whole thing is about affordability, is this tariffs, which we see happening now, potentially a huge Achilles heel for Trump?
Well, there's no question. The souring economy, the loss of consumer confidence. I do have very high-level conversations with Democrats. My suggestion to them, my free advice to Democrats, is start blaming the Trump tax or this Republican tax on housing. All Canadian lumber. Most of our homes are built with lumber from Canada. Mm. You start slapping a 25-30% tariff on taxes on Canadian lumber, you're dramatically increasing the cost of housing.
What do you make of the Democratic approach to this? The Democrats seem split on whether to put forward a budget, shut down the government, fighting with each other.
In many ways, the Democrats are not atypical of a party that's in the wilderness trying to find itself. But I think the dysfunction is really indicative of a larger generational split and perhaps even an ideological split. I think they're really due for a Tea Party moment where there's going to be much more populist sentiment running against the establishment leaders of their own party. And I think you're going to start seeing a lot more outsider candidates being much more successful, both for governor and for president of the United States.
So one of the things Democrats are split on right now is Gavin Newsom's podcast.
Yeah.
You wrote a great Substack about this, sort of looking at his motivations. Yeah. What's your main point?
Well, my main point was this was either the worst launch for a presidential campaign in history, or it was the most brilliant launch of a media company in history. This is a generational talent. Whether you agree with Gavin Newsom or not, he is definitely one of the leaders of the Democratic Party. He may or may not run for president, but I have no, there's no question in my mind that this is about building an infrastructure to communicate with Americans broadly, Californians perhaps specifically, with a very non-traditional audience. And that's something the Democrats as a party have not figured out yet. He seems to be the first.
Is there an argument, though, that maybe it does help him run for president? Not clearly he's pissed off the left.
Yeah.
Clearly the right, super right, is suspicious of him.
Yeah.
But folks in the middle, does it help with them, maybe?
I don't know that it helps directly in terms of being convincing MAGA that suddenly Gavin Newsom is a moderate. I don't see that. But what I do believe is happening is there are now many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of new voices listening to him, tuning into him, that weren't otherwise. And that's how you start to begin to change.
So the obviously the assumption is that he's running for president, but you think he might not be?
I think he might not be. Let me put it this way. I don't believe that launching this podcast and having Charlie Kirk and Michael Savage and Steve Bannon was part of launching a presidential campaign. I don't believe that. I do believe he's building the media infrastructure to have a national megaphone when he leaves the governor's office in 2 years. Whether he runs for president or not, he's absolutely going to be the central voice of the Democratic Party for the next few years.
You think so?
I believe so.
Let's talk about the governor's race.
Yeah.
You've been involved in California's governor's race before. You just were here and saw our interview with Katie Porter.
Yeah.
What did you make of what she said and her launch this week?
I think Katie has actually a very interesting message because she does come from a sort of populist left wing of the party, the Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, that is in many ways very anti-institutional. But I think that being just in elected office makes it very difficult to credibly make the case that Democrats have brought down housing in the state because they haven't, or have made the economy better for working class people because they haven't in California, or made education better because they haven't, or homelessness better because they haven't. The Democrats need their own sister soldier moment. They need a huge pivot away from the voices that have held elected office and forced them to have a real honest conversation about how to best protect the values they say they believe in, especially when it comes to working class, poor people, and those on the margins.
I mean, in fairness to Porter, she hasn't been in any of those statewide offices here before, but it didn't seem like she had a lot of specifics in terms of an actual plan on how to do it.
I mean, I'll leave that to the interview and for the viewers on with Katie Porter. I like Katie. I think she actually does bring some excitement and energy to the national discussion. But we'll have to those specific policy proposals I'll leave to other Democrats.
Last time around, you ran Antonio Villaraigosa's campaign for governor. You write about in the book fact that you guys used to be warring with each other and then you ended up getting together.
Yeah.
He's running for governor, seems to be going running against the party. What do you make of what he's doing?
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to work for him in 2018 is he had the courage to kind of stand up and say, we're heading in the wrong direction. In many ways, the lessons that the Democratic Party learned in 2024 were the message that exactly the messages we were running on in 2018 for governor, and the party went in a different direction, and you can see what's happened to the Democratic Party as a result. The question is, and Tony and I are very close, consider him like a father, is that message and him as a messenger still as resonant? How big is that lane? If you've got 7 or 8 candidates in the field, that I think that's one thing. If it's just Kamala Harris and 1 or 2 candidates, it's something entirely different.
Do you think the winner of that race has gotten into the race yet?
The winner of?
The governor's race.
I don't. I think the winner is probably in there somewhere.
Of the current crop?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there anybody you're especially interested or excited about?
I'm watching very closely and will probably be advising Steve Klubeck's race for governor.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
a lot of people maybe not have heard of, who's a business guy who is running sort of as an outsider.
He's, an outsider.
He's running as an outsider.
He's running as a complete outsider, but a lifelong Democrat. Somebody who's given to Democratic causes, candidates, was tapped by Barack Obama to lead up Brand USA to kickstart tourism in the wake of a 9/11. Somebody who's a successful Californian first and foremost, but my interest in this, and what I think is going to be most resonant, is he's willing to challenge the orthodoxy. You're hearing Katie Porter talk earlier, rightfully so. We probably need to start CEQA all over again, not just tinker on the edges. Mm. It's been a crisis for black and brown people and working class people in the state to get housing for 20 years. Why are we just now beginning to talk about this? Some people have been, and they need their voices elevated in the Democratic Party.
So you're Klubeck over Caruso.
I'm Klubeck over Caruso.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We like to do something on this show. Well, why? Why Klubeck over Caruso?
I think Caruso's fine. I think he's a great candidate. I think he'd make a great mayor of Los Angeles. I think that's probably what he wants. That seems to be where he's leaning. I think they have very similar qualities and candidates. I know that they know each other. I just think that the $100 million he spent becoming mayor of Los Angeles, I think proved in large parts to that he was prescient on what LA needed, especially in the times of crisis. I think if he wants to be mayor of LA, it's there for the taking. I think if you had Caruso and Klubeck being both mayor and governor, you've got a real change for California's fortunes. And I expect that might be what we end up seeing.
It's interesting. All the conservatives in the race keep saying Caruso for mayor. let's end with something called personal issues.
Yeah.
Where we get to know your cultural favorites.
Okay.
First thing that comes to mind, what is your favorite TV show?
Boy, I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but I watch a lot of documentaries.
Any favorite documentaries?
I just finished the last Made in America documentary with O.J. Simpson.
Oh.
For a reason. Jim Newton, LA Times reporter, was a big part of that story.
One of the best documentaries ever.
Yeah.
Favorite movie?
Of all time?
Sure.
The original To Kill a Mockingbird.
Favorite book of all time?
I'm reading, I think, what might be my favorite book right now, which is Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy on Democracy in America.
There's a throwback.
Yeah. It's been around a while.
Yeah.
Not an original copy. Yeah. But yeah.
And who is your role model?
Boy, my role model. Father Cosgrove, I think, a priest who kind of taught me the benefit of always looking out for the least among us and fighting for the least among us, regardless of the way the rest of the world sees you.
That is a great lesson and a great thing to end on. Yeah. Mike Madrid.
Always a pleasure.
Great to have you on the show. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Our thanks to Mike Madrid. Now to our conversation with Matt Mahan, the mayor of San Jose, who is a Democrat, but getting a whole lot of plaudits from Republicans for what he's doing in terms of homelessness and suggesting that it may be time to start arresting the homeless that don't take shelter. He also has a plan to base pay raises for city leaders on doing a good job. How about that? So here is our conversation from the Fox 11 News at 6 this week.
Mayor Mahan joins me now. Mayor, thanks so much for being with us. What is the basic policy?
Well, thanks for having me, Alex. The concept here is that we're asking our residents and taxpayers to invest tens of millions of dollars in building basic, dignified shelter, often individual rooms with a door that locks, even often private bathrooms. And when we go to great expense to do that, do repeated outreach, and do everything in our power to help people move indoors into a safe space with supportive services, if they repeatedly refuse, we need to get them into the care of the county. We are beyond the point at which the city can help that person with the tools at our disposal. My proposal is we press trespassing charges as a way of getting them into a county behavioral health court so that a judge who specializes in mental illness and addiction or other related issues can determine the best path forward. The goal is not to put people in jail. It's to create accountability for coming indoors. And if someone is truly unable to accept that help, get them over to the county where hopefully they can get the help that they need.
And in that scenario, they not necessarily just locked up, they could potentially be given treatment. Would they be forced into treatment?
No, we don't do forced treatment. I think there's at least forced medication. I do think that mandating treatment and giving people a choice if they are committing other crimes is acceptable. At some point, the impact on the community is so great that we have to have accountability and create consequences. But what I'm talking about here is not even necessarily people committing, you know, serious property or violent crime. I'm trying to address the fact that we just built brand new interim housing with an in-suite bathroom, kitchenettes. I mean, these look like market rate apartments. And when we did repeated outreach to the encampments in the neighborhood, one in three people in the encampment said, no thanks, I'd rather stay here on the streets. That's not sustainable, it's not acceptable, it isn't fair to the broader community. What I'm looking for is accountability to come indoors, and if people repeatedly refuse, getting them into a behavioral health court where, to your point, they're not sitting in jail, they're actually getting connected with a program and they have a choice to enter treatment.
So in terms of incentivizing for this to actually happen, you're also announcing something pretty interesting in terms of the way your city moves forward, which is bonuses for doing a good job in government. What a concept. Can you talk about how that works and if you're getting any pushback on that?
Yeah, well, you know, inside the building, there are people who love it and people who hate it, but the community overwhelmingly likes the idea that any pay raises that we give to senior leadership, starting with me, with the mayor, city council members, city manager, city attorney, and those most senior department heads, that any raises beyond cost of living must be tied to performance on the things people care most about: getting people indoors and ending homelessness, cleaning up the city, bringing down the crime rate, building the housing we need where it makes sense, supporting our small businesses. So my proposal is this: each year when we pass a budget, we should identify a small set of focused goals that reflect our community's greatest needs. We should set a performance target where we want to be at the end of that fiscal year. We should measure how we actually do. And at the end of the year, we should not get any raise without results. This should be tied to measurable performance for the people with the most authority, the most power at City Hall, and frankly, in most cases, the highest salaries.
And real quickly, are you hearing from mayors in other cities around California that either like or dislike these ideas? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people watching this that think, I wish my mayor would do this.
Well, we're getting an overwhelming response from the community. I'm not hearing a whole lot from elected officials about it, but maybe that'll come in time. But I will tell you, from San Jose residents and on social media, folks from all over love the idea that we would be that transparent. That's what I have tried to do. Coming from the private sector, I have a tech background. I came into government 2 years ago. We set up dashboards. We focused in on a few key issues. We've really increased our ability to measure what we're doing, where your tax dollars are going, how much impact they're having. I think the next step is to say our pay raises should be tied to measurable improvement in things like public safety and ending homelessness. Yeah. I just think that's common sense.
And such a tech approach from one of the biggest tech cities in the state, San Jose. Matt Mahan, bringing business to government. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Grateful to Matt Mahan for joining us this week. Also thankful to all of our guests, including Katie Porter and to Mike Madrid. A couple other conversations I had this week on the Fox 11 News at 6 include Josh Friday, the California Chief Service Officer, about expanding the Service Corps program, 10,000 new people. We talked with Isaac Bryan, who is the assembly member who is trying to increase pay for incarcerated firefighters. All of that is available right now at youtube.com/AlexMichelson. And if you go there, you'll also see a preview of our show next week, which is a big one. We traveled to Santa Barbara to talk to Jane Fonda, the actress and living legend, and that phrase is overused, but not here, who is fighting back against oil pipeline in the area, and she's joining in that fight Julia Louis-Dreyfus. We talked to her as well. We talked to the oil company behind it. We talked to Governor Newsom's chief environmental advisor. All that being put together for a special half hour next week on The Issue Is. But for this week, we thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Again, I'm grateful for any comments in social media or any emails or any way to connect with us, and hope you'll like and subscribe and tell people about our show. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is.